This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy from Armature, providing software solutions for conformity assessment, standards, and policy management. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Mark Pietrasanta, CTO, and Sean Fitzpatrick, Director of User Experience for a company called Aquilon. Good morning, gentlemen. How are you today?
Good morning, John.
Good morning, John. Excellent.
Kind of have a strange experience. Mark was on the air with me a few years back, and what I've been noticing, I go to events, and I talk to people, I read articles, and this name Aquilon just pops up, and I don't know, it just kind of pops up, and didn't really know, you know, what to do to have him on again, or I didn't know what the topic should be, and Mark seemed to pop up in many different areas, not just one, but user design, web, but all kinds of different things, and so I was online and I saw a new website, and this new website came out. It was healthcare.gov. And what I did is I sent an email to the public relations people, Peter, and I said, Peter, I'd love to get some folks in the studio to discuss the magic here. And he said, we'll get back to you. At the same time, I contacted Aquilon. So it turns out you guys are involved in this website. So, you know, we're all kind of getting together on the same page here. And there's a lot to be said for, I think, for the new designs for some government websites I've seen. And what we're trying to do today is maybe talk about website design and from a perspective of a federal IT professional, what guidance can you guys give them, what best practices are, and maybe they use your company, maybe they don't, maybe they're designing something on themselves, and maybe they can pull something out of your brain, Sean, or your brain, Mark, and oh, I never thought of actually testing or maybe looking at a customer experience before in this detail. I think that's the whole purpose today is if one person can pull something out of this and save their agency money or maybe meet a deadline quicker or maybe serve citizens better, I think then we'll accomplish something today. Before we begin, let's talk about your background. Mark, let's start with your background, and then we'll switch over to Sean, please.
Sure. I'm Mark Pietrasanta. I'm Aquilon CTO, and I've been with Aquilon for 10 years. Aquilon is a federally focused company, solution-focused company, and we focus in the core areas of cloud computing, mobile application development, and web application development. And we really do a lot of this. We're really passionate about this, as you mentioned. And our customers benefit from this through really significantly strengthened citizen engagement and constituent engagement and substantially reduced costs. So that helps a lot. And we've just been doing this forever.
Yeah, sure. Not forever for you. How long for you, Sean?
Sure. So yeah, Sean Fitzpatrick here, Director of User Experience. My background is in human factors engineering. I've been actually in practice for about 17 years now. I have a graduate degree in human factors and been with Aquilon about 8 years now. And when we first started, we were, you know, smaller company, and I think we had close to 13 user experience professionals. And we define user experience as visual design, information architecture, usability, and content strategy. And we had a small growing business in that. And it's interesting to watch the takeoff of the web and citizens' expectations for usability when they're interacting with federal websites for services. Their expectations are set by Google and Amazon. You know, they don't expect to be running into a lot of trouble and having difficulty finding services and having to pick up the phone. So the light went off in a lot of our customers' heads, or the light bulb went off, I should say. And I think we've got about 70 user experience professionals now spread across
Seven,
the federal
oh, wow,
government.
Yeah, incredible.
It's pretty awesome. It's really fun. It's really focusing on the user, and it's a career people that are in that career get pretty passionate about.
You know, Mark, I'm an old geezer. I've seen all kinds of things over the years. Initial websites for commercial and for federal agencies, they were kind of billboards. And then it transitioned to something more important, especially for commercial, because they had to make money, and they changed and they adapted. And I think the federal government's slowly kind of responding to that. And this website that you guys helped design, it's kind of saying, well, you know, maybe we shouldn't be a billboard. Maybe we shouldn't be a speaker blasting out information. Maybe there should be kind of interaction. And that's, I think, what this website shows is that respect for the customer. customer or the citizen in this case.
That's right. And in fact, one of the foundations, as you mentioned, John, the evolution that the federal government's gone through with websites, the anchor of that is really the federal digital government strategy. And that is, it's really important in terms of websites, but also just in terms of content and reaching the citizen. And so this is something that the federal government put out about a year ago that is focused on delivering content and data to citizens wherever they are at any time on any device they happen to have. So it's exactly as you said, instead of just let's have a billboard blasting out information and hope that people get it, we need to make sure that this information is getting to every constituent, no matter what device that they're using, and that it's doing it in a very engaging way.
I don't want to be a dead horse here, Sean, but sure. I think everyone knows that healthcare IT is changing right now, and the federal government is right in the middle of this big mess, and people are trying to figure out, oh my goodness, where am I getting my insurance? What about my cousin in Illinois? They're doing it one way, I'm doing it this way, this person does it this way. And what's happening is maybe people at CMS said, well, perhaps we can assist with a website. You can go to a website and get information on this whole insurance stuff. And that's the question they're trying to respond to this website, isn't it?
Sure, sure. And it's actually, and it's bigger than just getting information about healthcare. Now, that's obviously super important, and having a site named healthcare.gov certainly, in my mind, makes an awful lot of sense just from how you name the URL of the site. But at the end of the day, this is where, you know, thousands, if not millions of Americans are actually going to get insurance. And it's a non-traditional method. They're going to go on to this marketplace on healthcare.gov is a key component of the Affordable Care Act, and be able to actually shop for stuff that's just right for them and actually end up getting the insurance that they might not have otherwise had. And why this particular website and the design of it was so important, I think, is because there's not really much room for lack of usability or difficulties in there. People are really in a special situation when they're going there trying to get information for themselves and their family, and their healthcare is so important to them. The amount of user research that was put into the site for the design and development of it is actually phenomenal and remarkable. In my career, I've seen just a few places where that much emphasis is put on the user. And it's all designed about these different profiles and personas, as we like to think of them.
Testimonials from me, I saw it and immediately said, wow, this looks great. Who did it? Mm-hmm. And I didn't know you guys, didn't anything to do with you guys. Separate from that, I contacted you folks and got you on the air. So Mark, my wife and I bought a car back in December, and we sat down with a piece of paper. So what kind of car we need? Well, the kids are all grown, so we need a big car. Okay. Well, we got a good amount of this. And then we this. Well, I like this model, like this. And we wound up and bought this car. And I think for this website, it's the same thing. So here Mark is home with his wife, figuring out we need insurance, and this is our situation, and this is where you were. And that's what this site is, isn't it?
That's exactly what this site is. And I bet you might not have been looking for that car with just a traditional computer. You might have been looking on a tablet or even a smartphone to try to find
it. I might have been with my wife in the car as we're driving sure. at the same time right. with a mobile
that's
device right there,
right.
huh?
That's yeah. right. And that's why that's so important, is more and more people are getting to this information. They have these questions. They need information. In some cases, it's their only means of access is via a smartphone or maybe via a tablet. And so it's really important, particularly as Sean mentioned, in terms of the mission of healthcare.gov and the goal of the people we're trying to reach with that. It's really important that be accessible no matter what device people are using, and at any time, in the car, walking on the street, you know, wherever you happen to be.
I think one thing that's important is if you go visit this website, you'll see that it may not apply to you because of some time constraints. But guess what? It's not October 1st yet. Guess what? It's not January 1st yet. And so what you have to do is maybe set, you know, your schedule for the Washington Redskins before they start playing. I mean, that's what you're doing here, Sean. You're saying, okay, well, in October, we're probably going to complete more parts of this after certain aspects. And in January, you know, this is really what we're writing the site for, but we're letting you know we're doing it ahead of time. And so what you're doing is anticipating it sounds like a commercial here for a marketing company. You're anticipating demand. So the government's anticipating demand.
They really are. That's exactly right. And sort of like building it all in stages. So it's ready for that demand has really been the core focus since we joined the project. Probably close to a year ago, if not longer.
Yeah, and CMS, as you mentioned, within HHS, has really just done an amazing job with this. This is a huge, huge effort and just a huge audience that they're trying to reach with a very, very tight timeline and, you know, pretty significant goals. And so to do this, to get something launched now, to anticipate the October dates and the dates next year and make sure that it's ready to go and ready for every citizen that needs it, is just a tremendous achievement.
Let's go back.
And the fact that they put so much emphasis on the usability and their interaction of the citizen with it is also remarkable. And it shows sort of the progressive thinking within CMS, particularly with the groups that we get a chance to work with.
And so, Sean, if you're a federal IT professional and there's snow on the ground, it's 2 o'clock in the morning, you're listening to this interview. So the takeaway is that if you're trying to design a website, what you want to do is start off with the user experience, maybe find out about users or what we call personas. Is that a get a piece of paper, trying to sketch out who's going to come? Is that a good place to start?
Well, a couple of different ways to start, and it depends on the kind of the purpose of the website. Some are more transactional, and some are more information-centric, and some are more like e-commerce and shopping type of websites. And it really, what it all boils down to is understanding your user and your audiences, what they're trying to accomplish, and what kind of content needs to be meet those goals or what tasks they're trying to accomplish. And really wrapping that up with rigorous user research, analysis, prototyping, and then testing with those representative user groups to make sure you got it right. And when you didn't get it right, which you won't the first time, iterating through a few cycles, bringing real users in to test it out. It's been very helpful.
I like the idea of being flexible and agile and testing things out. And it's nice not to think you have all the answers, because no one can, because it's a changing marketplace and a drastically changing marketplace in 2013. Let's take a break. We can come back, talk more about federal sites and design the sites and responsive design, and maybe get some tips from both of you on what to do if you're charged with putting together a site for 2014 and how to start and where to start. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Mark Pietrasanta, CTO, and Sean Fitzpatrick, Director of User Experience at Aqualent. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, Mark Pietrasanta, CTO, and Sean Fitzpatrick, Director of User Experience, a company called Aqualent, AQUILENT.com. For more information, they've got blogs and tweets, and they have a very, very nicely designed site. What a surprise. It's like a car mechanic's car's running. You know, it's a real nice site. I tell you, I went to your blog, and I looked, and said, geez, this is kind of easy to read, kind of nice to click. So I go, oh, I'm involved in user experience. It kind of makes sense. A lot of people say, well, this is kind of like theoretical and nice, and you know, responsive design is good and listening to users is fine, but well, give me a specific. And so, Mark, let's, you know, I'll point right to you. Okay, well, this is all good, Jim Dandy, and great, and listen to customers, listen to citizens, and respond to that. I guess you folks have worked with HRSA HRSA, and they had a need, and you looked at it and said, well, maybe we should go mobile, maybe we should have an app. And well, give me the process here, Mark, and tell me about this HRSA situation, please.
Sure. HRSA, which is an agency, an operational division within HHS, they have something that many people don't know is HRSA has a bunch of clinics across the country, and they're free to U.S. citizens to be able to come in and get general health care. They wanted to reach their target users, both people that were coming to the clinics, but also people that were potential candidates to come to those clinics. And the first thing they did was develop a website and put it out there. And they didn't really see much traction or much change with their target citizens, and they wondered why. So they hired us to do a bunch of user research, and we did a lot of work. But what it boiled down to was their target users actually didn't, most of them, many of them did not have desktop computers and couldn't get to that large website. They had smartphones mostly, and even feature phones. And so this was an example of putting the cart before the horse, worrying about the content, but not thinking about the users yet. So they, by engaging Aqualent, they kind of redirected that and said, we got to think about the users and the content together. And once they did that, they realized we've got to have a mobile app, we've got to have a mobile website, we've got to be able to reach those smartphone users and get them to the clinics.
So is this shoe leather research? Is this do it online research? Or what was this?
It's a great question. And so the Aqualent team that I was working with, we ended up setting up shop down in one of the health centers in Southeast. And we were interviewing actual patients coming in. And they'd get a small stipend to participate in the research. And you know, we were using this technique called card sorting, where you basically set up categories for the website and you give them some sample content items that might go in it and say, where would you put this? What bucket would you put this in? And they did a really good job in that. And then more participants than I expected said right to my face, well, I don't actually use a computer. If I use one, it's at the library. I mostly use my phone. And about half of them had smartphones, and the other half had, you know, black and white regular cellular phones with a mobile browser on it. So that was you know, some really, really sort of eye-opening, mind-blowing information that we were able to take back to our customer. And translate into the strategy for the site, actually. It turned translated into their mobile strategy.
So, Mark, then you got together with your team, or Sean got together, and you said, well, here's the data we've collected, and here's the goal for the agency. How can we best accomplish this goal? Should it be a mobile site? Should it be an app? Should it be a billboard in Southeast? I mean, so right. Then you had to decide.
That's right. And you hit on something else, too. It's more than just the technical piece of this, right? An element of this also is putting cards in doctor's offices where a lot of these target citizens were. So it is certainly the website, the mobile app, the mobile site, but it's also other forms of communication. But you really hit on it. I mean, something that we stress all the time, and it's hard, is a lot of times people want to lead with technology. I want to, you know, do a pretty website, or I want to do a mobile application, or I want to do something else. And we are always redirecting that into focus on your content and your users, and that will lead you to technology. And so, as you just described, that's what we did here. Focus on the content and the users, and then put together a strategy, and out of that fell the technology. And what in this case, what fell out of that was doing a mobile app so that they could find it in an app store and download it very easily if they were looking for it, and also doing a mobile site. So if they were searching on the internet from their smartphone, from their mobile device, that they would also find that same information and be able to access it on that device.
And this is one of the situations where, you know, taking the time to think about the mobile strategy really guided the decision-making process for Acquelent and our customer. The target users in this group did not need to know all about the different programs that HRSA provides from a funding perspective. They didn't need to know about the media center. They didn't need to read the press releases. So we were able to help hone it into very specific, discrete tasks. And at the end of the day, it was really one very specific task: getting healthcare and finding out where they could get it.
Location.
So
yeah.
It was not a mobile site that was just a mirror image of the entire HRSA.gov website. It was actually a find a health center. So it's very, very specific, task oriented. Don't blind them with information that they don't need. Let's get them what they need fast, get them healthcare, and move on.
I don't want to brag. I have a T-shirt at home that says HCIL on it, Human Computer Interface Lab from the University of Maryland.
Big fan.
You're talking this, I'm closing my eyes going, Human Computer Interface, what's HCIL? That's the lab. I mean, it sounds like this could be a case study from University of Maryland. It's a computer interface. So this computer stuff is great. So what? Right. If it doesn't help people, and this is where the connection is.
Yeah, there's a real nerdy button that I used to see around like at the conferences I would go to over the years, and it says if the users can't find it, it doesn't exist. And at the end of the day, it's really true.
So, Mark, the lesson learned here for my listeners with HRSA is listen first, be flexible and open. Or what kind of lessons would my listeners derive from this experience?
Primary lesson is start with your content and your users, and then have that drive to the technology. It's really that simple. Don't start with technology. Your technology will fall out of those decisions and that analysis.
And I just want to follow it up that how remarkable that is coming out of a chief technology officer's mouth. So Acquelent's definitely a pretty special place. And where it's not a blasphemy to talk about users and design and stuff. It's a really great place.
One aspect of this, I think, is something called designing website. And there's a topic that pops up normally. This is called responsive design. Yeah. And Mark, maybe you can give a quick little 30-second definition of what responsive design is. And is this an example of it, or is there a better example?
Yeah, it's a great question. And this is a good context to bring it up in. So responsive design is It's really a blending of existing technologies so that a web page and web content can dynamically match any device and meet the needs of any screen. And it's completely dynamic. So whether you're coming from a smartphone or a tablet or a computer or a television or some as yet created device, that content will dynamically resize and fit to shape that screen.
And so responsive design has cost to it involved. I imagine if you specifically request a site designed with responsive design, does it take longer or more time or more input, or what happens with the design?
Yeah, a great question. So a lot of times people think about responsive design that, hey, I can now do my mobile site for free, right? I've got a desktop site, I'm going to do responsive design and get a mobile site for free. And in fact, that's not the case. Responsive design is a great technology to help ensure that your content and visuals and everything else look good on all the devices, But it is not much less work than actually developing a site for each of those devices. It is less, but it's not much less. You still have to do a visual design. You still have to decide, well, how do we rearrange this content when we go from, for example, three columns to two columns to one column? And where do some of the callouts go? And so there's a lot of work, just as if you were developing a different site.
You know, Sean, years ago, there was an advertisement about a beer called, you know, something about tastes great, less filling, tastes great, less filling. And you got to have one or the other. And I was thinking about this and applying it to the situation. So it's an app or it's an MDOT, a mobile site app, or is that the dilemma, or can you have both?
Well, you can certainly have both. And layering over into that discussion that's really important is the responsive design choice as well. They all fit different needs for the customer. And we certainly have scenarios where one makes more sense over another one. And a good example is at the National Cancer Institute, NCI's cancer.gov. A lot of work was done there to determine what the key user tasks are in the mobile world. So based on, you know, piles and piles of user research of what people are trying to accomplish when they're with using their mobile devices, it was found out it was a very small number of discrete tasks that people were trying to accomplish with their mobile device on the cancer.gov site. So it made sense in that scenario not to retrofit the entire site into a responsive design and make it work on any device, anytime, anywhere, and retweak your entire content strategy to fit that. It made an awful lot more sense to go to create a m.cancer.gov, which is a mobile site with a very discrete set of tasks. For example, you are sitting in the doctor's office and you've just been diagnosed with cancer. You really don't need read a lot about the agency's priorities. That's for sure. You need a quick list of topics, of cancer topics, and you need to get information really fast. You need a way to call cancer.gov's hotline immediately and get information all on the spot in a very stressful situation. So really honing things into the really discrete, important tasks really played a real big role in our success for m.cancer.gov.
Let's take a break and come back. Talk more about an interesting topic of bite, snacks, and meals, and getting information in a slow fashion, a quick fashion, and the correct amount for you. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Mark Pietrasanta, CTO, and Sean Fitzpatrick, Director of User Experience for Aquilent. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Mark Pietrasanta, CTO, and Sean Fitzpatrick, Director of User Experience for Aquilent. If you want more information, you can go to A-Q-U-I-L-E-N-T, aquilent.com, and they have blogs and tweets and everything else. I went to your site, and Mark here writes a blog for his company, huh? What a great idea. Who ever thunk of that one, huh? Tell me about your blog and what you cover, and what happens for the listeners.
Sure. So we, on our blog, cover a lot of different topics, and really from across our company. We've got thought leaders in topics, everything from technology to user experience to content inventory to business analysis, project management, et cetera. So all sorts of really great topics, and it's an opportunity for our experts to communicate out to our customers and industry.
Yeah, I was reading it this morning, and wide range of topics as well. I think maybe that's why I stumbled on Aquilent in many different areas of this. It's kind of interesting. You know, I listen to other radio shows in town, and there's some silly guys in another station. They have this show, I think, on the weekends called Snacks of the Round Table, and they talk about their favorite snacks. These are young men talk about their favorite snacks, and they would go for an hour or so, you know. And when I think about snacks, I think about this one concept that's related to responsive design, maybe related to web design. It's called getting a bite and a snack and a meal. And maybe, Sean, is anything to do with Snacks of the Round Table, or is this all computer design?
Well, it all depends on how hungry you are,
yeah,
without a doubt. And Mark will chime in a little bit about the technical impacts of this. But sure, bite, snack, meal is a certain really important emerging concept with responsive design. When you're thinking about content that needs to appear on a small screen in a you know sort of mobile environment, they don't necessarily, an end user might not necessarily need the full meal all at once. So we have a concept of feeding them just a little bite. And if they like that bite, that might be a small snippet of the header of an article or something like that. Enough for a teaser. If you think just the link in a Google search results page, something like that. And then a little bit more might be the snack. So they've got a little bit, you know, a paragraph, a truncated paragraph possibly, getting a little bit more information. And they said, okay, this is exactly the one I need to drill into. there's a lot of scanning going on these smaller devices. So the easier ways to make things scanner is just keep it really short, simple, easy to read. And then when you get on the what they call the scent of information, you get on the right scent of information and you dig right in and get your meal. So that could be end up being three clicks by the time you get to a full article on whatever concept or topic it might be.
Go back to the first block. We talked about buying a car. Okay, you want to get a car. Okay, what kind? We want a four-door. Bang. Okay, what kind do you want? Well, I want a, this model. Okay, Honda. Okay. And then it's the same type of thing. I don't want to know everything about every SUV that Honda's ever manufactured in the last 20 years. I don't care about SUVs anymore.
Right.
And so this is the snack meal.
And it really goes into the whole scanning thing. There's a lot of it of the bite part, because there's limited space and people have limited attention, and there's been multiple really solid studies saying that people just are not going to read
online.
So you really got to get them hooked on the right thing at the right time, and then they'll dig deep.
So Mark, how does this apply to our federal listeners who beat their head against the wall? They got to design a site for who knows what, a safety site or something, and so how can they apply this?
Sure. One of the great things, but also one of the challenges about federal websites is that they've got a ton of amazing content, like really big, rich, deep content. And that works really well on a desktop. That doesn't work so well when you're on a mobile screen. Scrolling, using your finger and scrolling and scrolling and scrolling and scrolling and scrolling to read a bunch of content is very hard. As Sean has mentioned, you really need these things to be scannable. And so what the Bite Snack Meal approach does is it encourages the content owners to really think about what is the core meaning of their content, not what is the three pages of content, but what's the core meaning of their content. If someone, you're trying to attract someone to read about your content, what is it? What is it that you would use? How would you distill that down? And then allow them to click through and show their interest. So on a mobile device, it's just so important to have those bites, those snacks, to allow those mobile users to find the content that they need.
Sean, at Google, they have thousands of people making sure that when I type in baseball tickets, I get a quick search. And I think with website design, people want it to be fast. So a federal agency has to make sure their website's responsive and fast. And this may, this snack bite may help them with the speed of the website, huh?
Sure.
It's not going to be a performance hit.
Sure. It can certainly help with loading a page quickly, because you're not loading everything that they don't need all at once. There's no question about that. And there's different sort of underlying technologies with different types of progressing loading. You can load things in the background and really just display the bite first and make it really rapid if they decide to navigate down one of the snack and meal paths.
And this really gets at the core of when to choose responsive design and when not. So if you've got a site that has a lot of great content and you can break it apart into bite snack meals and make that available on a mobile device, then responsive could be a really good choice for you, because you can make it accessible to the mobile user and you can make it accessible to the desktop user, and all that same content is available to both. But if you've got mobile users that have really discrete tasks, like we've talked about in terms of the cancer site, in terms of USA.gov, in terms of lots of different mobile-centric sites. In the commercial world, there's lots of sites like this too. Taco Bell's mobile site looks nothing like their desktop site, because they're targeting users that are in a restaurant. And so what do you want there? You want to know calorie information. You want to know about the balance on your gift card to Taco Bell. So it's a very specific task-centric approach. If you have that task-centric approach, responsive design doesn't make sense. If you're making all your information available to everybody on every device, responsive design is a great approach.
So if you're listening to this at 2 o'clock in the morning, sometime in the fall, you can go to vaccines.gov, vaccines.gov, and take a look at it. Nothing to do with Mark, nothing with Aquant. Take a look at vaccines.gov and see if that site works, huh? Is that a good example of responsive design and something that actually works?
That's a great example. And actually, we did vaccines.gov, interestingly enough. But the content is not about Aquilent, but it's a really good example of a site where it's collecting a bunch of information from across the federal government and making it available to citizens.
Yeah, and another one that folks might want to check out is betobaccofree.gov. That's a topic-based portal.
It's betobaccofree.
Correct, betobaccofree.gov. And that's also it's a fine responsive design site. And what makes it so interesting is the amount of thought and timing that was put into the content strategy before a single design or sketch was created. It really, large focus of our team working there to go through and sift through all these various amounts of tobacco content across various federal agencies and work with our federal government partners to decide what was really important based on the user's needs.
Mark, in the commercial world, I would look at responsive design and say, well, what about my banner ads? What about my video? I don't know if the federal agencies would have that concern. Would they have that type of concern?
They can. There are additional considerations to make when you're dealing with things like video, when you're dealing with things like heavy graphics. So it may not be banner ads specifically, but the analogous version of that in the federal sites are really rich landing pages. If you go to a lot of federal sites, they look very much like whitehouse.gov, and they're a very rich, graphic heavy site with the equivalent of a banner ad, right? Something very nice and pretty across the top that works great on a desktop that doesn't work great on a mobile device. So these things all have to be considered. And another approach that we often push with our customers is thinking about mobile first. It's a lot easier to take a mobile site and make it work on a desktop than it is to take a desktop site and make it work on a mobile device.
Ah, the other way around. Never thought of that.
Yep.
From a user perspective, Sean, we can sit there and say, well, you could study users and benefit. But when they study users, I mean, they study, the research is done, they'll look at 1,400 different ways that people use a phone, one hand, left hand, on the train, on the car. And sure. they're really, really just compulsive about seeing how people use a handheld device.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And one of the neat tools that our Acquilent usability team has put into our toolkit in the past couple of years, probably about 3 or 4 years ago, was an actual addition to our mobile usability lab where you could clip in any type of mobile device, and we had a camera that would be mounted on top of it, and you could actually see what was happening on the user screen on the real device as they're using it, as they're putting your website through the paces. So we did that level of device testing with actual end users. It's been invaluable so far, actually.
And so the results from the actual users, I mean, you must have surveys or form feedback on sites like vaccines.gov. What kind of responses you gotten?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of what we're testing for is to make sure that with a desktop site, you're tracking mouse movement and you're making sure people can click through and find the information they need. On a mobile device, it's really the same thing, but the method of doing it is completely different, right? You've got to track their finger movement, and you don't really have any notion of where their finger is until they tap on something. So the importance of what Sean just described is to be able to do the equivalent of tracking mouse movement, but with their fingers as they're moving through that mobile device, and then make adjustments. So as you described, John, moving buttons from one side to the other because they're trying to reach it with just their thumb, or changing the order of the navigation because they can't find certain pieces of information. And so the same sort of principles that apply to doing usability testing and user research on a desktop site apply to a mobile site and mobile device. It's just the methods are a little bit different.
So what about new operating systems? Does it impact your websites? Does that mean anything at all? Or?
Sure, it always does. And the challenge used to be sort of even 5 years ago was just keeping up with the browser wars. And this is just another layer of complexity. And actually before the browser wars, it was the OS wars. And then you lay it on the browser wars. Now we lay on the mobile operating system wars and the television set wars. It just keeps going and going and going. And as Mark was saying earlier, for us at Acquilent and all of our colleagues out in the IT world, it's the work is not getting easier. It's actually getting more challenging and more time-consuming to keep up with it and do it right. It moves at a maddening pace.
Let's take a break and come back, talk more about website design and how federal agencies can actually have websites that are valuable to citizens. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Mark Pietrasanta, CTO, and Sean Patrick, Director of User Experience for Acquilent. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Mark Pietrasanta, CTO, and Sean Fitzpatrick, Director of User Experience for Acquilent. If you want to get more information or read their blogs and tweets, you can go to AQUILENT.com. And what about Twitter? Are you guys active on Twitter, Mark, or is that important for you? Or
yeah, it's very important for us, and it's another way to engage our customers and also engage the citizens, and so we're there, same name, at Acquilent.
That's easy to remember.
It's very easy.
If you want to follow me, it's at Ray Gilray, and if you want to read my blog, I'll be blogging about this interview. You just type in John Gilroy blog, and then I kind of pop up. I don't know how that happens, but it's kind of the magic of the internet. You know, one topic here, the big 500-pound elephant in the room that I just assume is always there, is the cloud. And so what relation does this response that I've had to the cloud, or is it just incidental or no impact at all?
Yeah, so an important part, particularly for the federal government, is that as amazing and as enabling as mobile is to the federal government and to reaching citizens, you still have to pay for it. And particularly the federal digital government strategy, which is a really important mandate, is not a funded mandate. And so agencies need to come up with money to pay for their move to mobile and to pay towards their move towards freeing up their content and information, and cloud is a fantastic way to do that. So for most of our customers, we move them to the cloud to save them, 70, 80, 90% of their previous costs. Which then helps them fund all of this great citizen engagement and move towards mobile.
Yeah, you've never heard unfunded initiative before, have you, Sean?
Oh, no.
And this is a good approach. So if you're an agency and you're listening to this interview wondering how you can do this little dance, you contact you guys, send an email, or maybe here's a way that we've worked with other agencies, and this is not a bad way to take and because I think there's an increasing amount of arm twisting going on to make a change. Websites being more user, and by the way, releasing information, all kinds of new changes here in the next few months. Many of my listeners are listening to this going, oh, who's the nerd here? Who's the real nerd and who isn't the nerd? And so what I have designed is a scientific test, 10 questions, to find out exactly who the card-carrying nerd is in this room. And Mark, you will go first.
Sure.
You've taken this before, but too bad. Take it again. When did you get your first PC?
Yeah, it was right around 1980, actually, when the PCs
Whoa,
first came out.
Whoa, that's going to be a tough one to beat, because Sean's young. That's going to be a tough one to beat, Sean. Let's give him a chance here. And when did you get your first cell phone?
First cell phone, much later. I didn't really need it, and I'm a little older than maybe I sound, so it was around, I was 26.
Okay. And do you have a personal Twitter feed?
I do. It's at Mark Pietrasana.
It's a tough one to spell, but he gets points for it. Okay. Do you have a personal blog?
I do. It's called streameverything.tv.
Oh, he's got all the right answers here. And do you use any online personal backup?
I do, and everybody should. That's really important. And I use iDrive.
What kind of smartphone do you have?
I have an iPhone 5.
And how many apps on that?
Well over 300.
Okay. And I used to ask how many tablet devices do you have in your home?
So I'm a little unique. I do a lot of home automation. And so the iPads, particularly the iPad Mini, is a great way to manage that home automation. So I actually have 10 tablets at home.
Wow. This is off the charts here. Well,
it's for managing the lights. And
you
the
have stock in that company.
Air conditioning. Yeah.
And are you active in any social networking sites?
I am. Facebook, certainly, more for personal use, and then Twitter at Mark Pietrasana for public use.
And last book read, electronic or paper?
It was, of course, electronic, and it was Moat in God's Eye, Larry Niven.
Yeah, I read that many years ago. Yeah, Moat is a speck.
Yes.
Okay, Mr. Fitzpatrick, you got a tough hill to climb here, buddy.
Yeah.
Okay. When did you get your first computer, or what age did you buy your first computer for you?
Well, the first computer, and it's going to be tough to put a year on it. I have to do a little Googling for it, but it was the TI-99, and it was the black computer with a membrane keyboard that you hook to your TV. And
you get some points for that, I tell you. That sounds pre-1980s, it sounds like to me, but I don't know for sure.
Basic programming, and you recorded on a tape.
So a cassette tape, ladies and gentlemen. No one knows that, but they use them for that. And when did you get your first cell phone?
It was around 96, 97.
That's respectable. And do you have your own Twitter feed?
I do not.
Do you have a personal blog?
I do not.
Well, you're going to have to catch up there.
I know.
You use any personal online backup services?
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that. I'm sort of a Dropbox and Flickr guy, and not a sort of Carbonite or any other commercial cloud services. Flickr, you know, for $20 a year, you can keep unlimited amount of photos up there at full resolution. So it's
pretty cheap.
Big photography. Yeah. It's a good place to put stuff.
What kind of smartphone do you have?
iPhone, but I've been an Android guy for a little while. When the Droid first came out, I thought it was worth giving it a shot, and I did. But then really the
number of apps?
Maybe a dozen or so.
Okay. And how many? You're not going to top this one. How many tablet devices at home?
Two. A Kindle and an iPad,
And active any social networking sites?
More active on the business side of LinkedIn, and then more online forums versus Facebook and type of stuff.
Last book you read, paper or plastic? Paper or electronic?
It was electronic, and it was Unbroken, and long title, but that's the best part of the title.
It's always interesting. You know, I would never guess 10 tablets is the first one that ever was 10. Wow, that's incredible. We'll have to put this through my UNIVAC computer in my basement, and we'll come up with print out with a green bar, and I'll mail it to you. So we'll find out exactly who wins here.
Perfect.
You know, a lot of challenges the federal government has, unfunded mandates. You got to release information. You got to switch to the mobile. And oh, by the way, you have two fewer people on your staff. And so, Sean, what's going to happen here in the next few years? Federal people just going to jump out the window and say, we can't do it, we can't do it. Are they going to accomplish this task? Is it only going to be mobile? I mean, where do you see it heading?
It's a really great question. And to compound it, the online content is doubling, tripling, quadrupling, whatever the number is, year by year. So content's not going away. So focusing on cleaning up your content for your federal sites is like one of the largest tasks that once you get over it, if you have a solid content strategy, you're going to be able to handle the future things that come at you a lot easier as long as you have a plan for it. So I think really getting your handle on content is probably the biggest cost savings, big upfront, long-term real cost savings once you really do it right.
And then taking it a little bit further than that, a couple of years further out than that, it's we right now think of content as web pages and things on a device, but you take it a little bit further out and you really free up this content. So the content exists almost on its own. And Google has a phrase about things, not strings, right? So thinking about the things that you're representing in this content, not just the words that are in that content. So, you know, imagine a future where you've got a concern or you've got a question about your taxes or a question about your child, and you just sort of ask this question, and then all the federal government content and information that's relevant to that question or your concern or your needs gets surfaced to you. Instead of you having to go out and find the pages that are relevant, the content that's relevant comes back to you. So we're in the beginning stages of this sort of change, this move from web pages and websites and mobile sites to this real content and the meaning of this content and the things this content represents. And so it's pretty interesting.
You know, Sean, when earlier in the show you talked about personas, and I guess typically if you would go to Google, type in persona, you'd get 122 articles by marketing people talking about, well, if you're selling a four-wheel drive, here's a persona for that. Or if you're selling a $1,000 suit, here's a persona for that. But you encourage our listeners to use personas for citizens and for providing services, and that's a good way to help them focus on what they can provide.
That's right. A persona is no magic bullet without really good research behind it. It's just a really good way to bring your target audience to life and keep it in the forefront throughout the design process. It's an archetype of the person, and it's built off data. It's built off real research. But then when you wrap it in a story, it becomes real. And as you're thinking, well, you know, can my grandmother use this site? And then you give that grandmother a name. Can Doris use this site? You know, and a really interesting example about the usage of personas was for healthcare.gov. We actually ended up, the Aquilon team and our federal customers ended up putting together something we called Project Sonia. And Sonia was the archetype of if we could solve...
Oh, she was the persona. Yeah,
she was the persona. If we could solve her problems based on all this massive amounts of beautiful research that created the Sonia archetype, if we could solve her problem through the healthcare.gov site, we were going to get an 80%, 75%, 90% of the others' problems with it.
And so one key is not thinking that your website isn't a billboard, isn't something to shout out information to. It's have selected information that would appeal precisely to that persona and what their interest is, like vaccines.gov. I mean, what we found out with vaccines.gov, many of the people didn't have desktop computers because, homeless? Is that right, Mark?
There's various reasons why people might not have desktop machines. Even younger children today don't use a desktop machine. They use a tablet. They use a smartphone. So there's lots of people who don't use desktops anymore. And so you really have to understand your target audience, understand their needs, and match that with the content, and then figure out what the technology is after that. It's just, can't stress that enough. And the personas are a great way, are one element of anchoring that, as Sean said. And it's even more the technical team. It's very useful to the technical team as well to have, oh, this is the person that I'm targeting. It's somebody with a name. And you couple that with real usability testing where you bring in actual people in addition to your personas, and you end up with a really usable site that's meeting your target citizens and target constituents' needs.
Sounds great.
And there's that other funny nerdy button from my conferences I was telling you about. This, the button said, know thy users, for they are not you.
And that's it, I always do it this way. So what? Yeah. You know, if you always have done it one way, maybe your user doesn't, and so you have to design it for them. It's an interesting aspect here. Great discussion. Perhaps come back and focus more on one specific problem and see what happens with healthcare.gov. Maybe a year from now, take a look at the statistics and go, well, here's a way you can evaluate a new website, and here's the metrics we used, and here's what we found. And by the way, we're going to change X, Y, and Z, and here's what we forgot, 1, 2, and 3. So might be a good interview here down the road. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Mark Pietrasanta, CTO, and Sean Fitzpatrick, Director of User Experience from Aquilent. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, John.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.